Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just going to say, did you chat Niall Horan at all, or what was the
In fact, no, I boycotted that because I went to the other school in Mullingar than him. There were two graduates of the music school of St. Finian's College in Mullingar in the room, been late, made listen to a CBS fella. Hello, and you're very welcome along to this week's episode of the Group Chat podcast from Virgin Media News. I am political correspondent Gavin Riley, joined in studio. In studio, because it feels like the first time in ages.
Well, I never.
By news correspondent Zara King.
Hello,
Zara, hello.
How are you?
And by news correspondent Richard Chambers. Richard, hello.
Hey.
It's great to be all around the same table again. Do you remember when we started talking about doing a podcast and part of our discussion was like, at least we could manufacture a reason where we'd actually sort of get to all be in the same place once a week? Sort of feel like I really value that now because we haven't been able to do it for so long.
For a couple of weeks. It's actually 1 year this week of the podcast.
It is.
Yeah, which is lovely.
Which I remember as being the anniversary of Micheál Martin getting COVID.
Oh, yeah.
What we talked about on the first episode. The more things change, the more they stay the same. How is everyone?
Good, yeah, good. I mean, last week I was so cocky about beating the jet lag, and yet here I am, having not had a great night's sleep for the whole week.
I told you it was way too early. I just thought it was way too early.
That's me taking down a peg because I thought actually that I'd slotted back in pretty well. So yeah. I'm going to be...
Although we were all awake in the middle of the night. Somebody texted the WhatsApp group and everyone replied at like 4:30 in the morning. And I was like, why are we all awake at 4:30 in the morning?
I blame children. Anyway, it's great to be back in. I hope everyone's well. The first thing we obviously have to talk about is all the housing stuff and evictions ban and whatnot. Before we sort of get into the high politics of what's going on in the Dáil and whether the government could collapse over all this, maybe we should just start with a very real illustration of where things are right now. Richard, you've been spending a bit of time this week on Daft, just looking to see what's
like
on Daft.
A lot of people will be, for the next period of time as they're handed notices to quit. And just as you make the point there that before we get into the high politics of it, again, as we've made the point so many times on this, is that for a lot of people, I feel that they lose sight of the fact that there are people at the end of all these things. And I feel that has never been more noticeable, I think, in Irish politics than in some of the horse trading and talk about, oh, whether or not the government will survive or whether this government TD will do that. And obviously that matters. Obviously that matters in terms of, well, obviously, you know, if the government doesn't survive, X happens and Y happens. But at the end of the day, we are in a situation where housing campaigners say, and I have heard from... dozens and dozens of tenants across the country.
You're only talking to Peter McVerry earlier this week.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This is a disaster waiting to happen is what is the feeling from the housing campaigners. There are people who are frightened to death of what is going to happen. And yet we have people who are like, whose main focus for this whole thing seems to be whether or not a green TD will jump over the fence or not. Like, come on and get real. For so a second here on these
things.
It's all
getting a bit lofty or a bit sort of conceptual.
It's not lofty. There's nothing lofty about people worrying about what Green TD is going to be out for 4 months or not when this thing passes, which it will. The counter motion will pass.
Okay. Spoiler alert for what's coming in a few minutes. It will pass.
Pass, right? So why are we worrying so much about what Green TD is going to be sitting on the sidelines for 4 months or not when people are not going to have a home to live in?
Fair.
Anyway.
Fair. All right.
That's my starting point on this.
How is Daft doing this weather?
Not great. Not great, as the as the weather says. So I had a look at a couple of the issues which are going to be very pertinent for people, particularly I say amongst our listenership in terms of shared houses in shared or rooms in shared houses, I should say, and one bed accommodation, because that is something which is a key shortage always throughout the last number of years, and in particular now. Very good. So it's a start in one bed. So this is a one bed property is available for rent in Dublin City. Currently 290 of those available, which isn't great in a huge city like Dublin.
No.
But when you get down to the regional cities, and this is often what is lost in the housing crisis, is how bad the situation is in rental situation in the other cities. So 7 one beds available in Cork City.
Seven.
31 in total for maximum
seven
numbers of beds.
Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That's it.
Seven.
Sorry, that's your selection.
31
in total.
Of
31 properties available for rent in Cork City.
And when you say one bed now, are we talking like studio, like your oven touching your bed territory?
A lot of them are that. A lot of them are that. So you have your kitchen counters beside your mattress, basically, in a lot of them. Some of them are one bed, so it'll be designated. Like,
how much are they? Are they like...
You have a range of these things as well. Some of them will be upwards of, you know, I think that the biggest I saw in Cork City, and this is obviously a moving situation, but so by the time people are listening to this, it might be out of date. Some of them were up to like 1,900 to 2,000 euro.
For the oven to touch the bed.
Yeah, effectively. Like in Galway, four one beds available, 33 in total. In Limerick City, two one beds available, six in total.
Six properties
were available
in Limerick City.
And I should say that of
the third biggest city in the Republic.
Yes.
Six properties.
Yes. And Gavin, the two one beds available in Limerick, both of those are renting for over 2,000 euros each.
Oh my God.
So that's unaffordable, as the people in Novus Housing, which is a great housing charity in Limerick, would say. Just in terms of the rooms in shared houses.
Yes.
Okay.
In Dublin, you have a total of 572 rooms available in Dublin City.
Okay.
Seems like a big number.
But when you think of the population of Dublin City and outside in commuter counties and people who are just moving to Dublin.
But sorry, isn't there like 7,500 notices to quit pending, though?
Yeah.
And there's 500 rooms. Like, that, those numbers don't match.
But also just one point on the rooms in houses to share. I've differentiated this because some of these houses are going to be owner-occupied as well. Some of them are going to be non-owner-occupied because most people would rather not
live with their landlord.
Live with the landlord.
Yeah, sure.
For simplicity reasons. So 572 in total, 333 in Dublin are non-owner-occupied.
So 240 people, if they want to live anywhere, they're going to have to be renting a room in someone else's house and they're living with the owner and the owner is the landlord with all the discomfort that comes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Cork, 67 rooms in houses to share in Cork City, 28 of them non-owner-occupied. 53 in Galway, 23 non-owner-occupied. And 33 total to share in Limerick, 14 non-owner-occupied.
That's like that. Like that to me is almost a far worse illustration than the shortage of one beds, because like that's the standard entry level thing. If you're an adult, like you're leaving college and you need to stay in the city, but like you don't have a group of people that you want to get a full house with, so you just want to get a room somewhere. That to me seems like the much more practicable net effect of all of this. And like if those rooms just aren't there, then but people who are in like a mutual tenancy, who are living with friends, who are about to be thrown out because the notices to quit are being allowed to take effect. Like, those people have nothing.
But for families, like, there's no real... That's no good to families. It's no good to people with kids.
So there are, obviously, we could spend all day going through the daft in terms of multi-rooms properties and stuff like that. But again, it's all very short. It's all few and far between. Leo Varadkar, even a couple of weeks ago, just before he went over to Washington, was saying, like, I mean, there is the situation, he admitted, where on websites like Daft and other ones, there are a couple of them which do this. Like, ads will go up and will disappear within minutes.
Yes.
Because somebody is like, I'll take this, I'm throwing my deposit at you, give me that,
or
I need a place to live.
Or you put them up and you get 200 email replies in a couple of minutes so you can take the ad down again. So maybe the level of ads on the site isn't really reflective of how many properties are out there. Just people are being swamped.
Totally. And sorry, just a point on the rooms. In Dublin, some of those rooms are going for like, again, 1,900 euros for a room.
For a room.
That's mad.
In a gaff. Or in an apartment. And it's like...
No one can afford.
That's wild.
What's the end point?
Zara, you've been talking to people on Instagram about how they're going to be affected by all of this.
Like, there's a real mix of, like, there's loads of replies. So we'll kind of pepper them through and we can discuss them as we go. Like, one of them says, petrified here. I'm 10 years. It's damp, but I'm afraid to ring the landlord in case we get put out. Another one said, I'm a child protection social worker and homelessness has put so much pressure on our service. Families are coming to us with nowhere to go. I can't imagine what next month will be like. Very stressed. My landlord could decide to sell up the house and Limerick has no housing. That was somebody in Limerick. There was a few other ones there as well. One saying, look, I'm a small landlord who had no choice but to rent my home, but also I should have the right to sell if I need to. Another one here, a woman who is nearly 60, full-time public sector worker, lost my long-term rental 2 years ago.
Yeah.
At that age, that is incredibly upsetting.
That is the thing. Like, it is actually worth pausing on that point because we do often look at it as a younger person issue.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
for so many people... just haven't been in a position where they can actually buy a property. And this, again, happens Limerick, Galway, Cork as well, Waterford, Kilkenny as well. Kilkenny is an absolute shortage of rental properties as well. So this is across the board the problem.
And we've spoken before as well about some of the shortcomings that you get when people just happen to meet a partner later in life and then they're not able to get a mortgage because they'd be expected to pay off the mortgage before retirement and nobody can afford the repayments over that shorter term as well. So like those people have no option but to rent. And if there's nothing going in the rental system, then... they've got nowhere.
But that's, that lady's example is sort of what we are heading towards. Like, that is the future for us. Like, if people can't afford to buy now, you're going to have way more people in their 60s in the next, you know, 20, 30 years, they're going to find themselves renting and in insecure accommodation. Look, just from a landlord perspective there, again, there's another one in here. Landlords need help. I can't afford to rent it. I have to sell up 3 houses. Rent does not pay my tracker mortgage. I own a house which is rented out. Yeah, I own a house which is rented out while I am renting. I need to sell my house now. I hope the ban is lifted.
People in situations like that, in fairness, like, and
some of them are accidental landlords.
Yeah, no one has a huge amount of sympathy for landlords deliberately or accidental, but like, there is a major issue there where if you bought an apartment, like we've got colleagues who are in this situation, if they bought an apartment during the Celtic Tiger years, but then they met someone and now they've got a family and they need a bigger property or they need somewhere with a garden, but they couldn't afford to buy that one. So they're letting out their apartment and the rent that they take in is still subject to income tax and PRSI and USC and they're losing about half of it. And then what they've left behind with is not enough to pay the mortgage. Like, those people are in pretty tricky situations and they're not being helped right now either. And the government's talking about doing something to help them. And this is part of what the government has put on the table this week to try and win independent votes. But that's stuff the government's been saying it's going to do for a couple of years and has never been able to figure out what to do.
Well,
so it doesn't do it.
If it is to help the situation with keeping people in the accommodation that they're currently living in, i.e. the tax changes coming for landlords, I hope it's probably more effective than the mitigation measures they have announced for lifting this the eviction ban, because some of these things already exist and some of them just don't work.
What doesn't work?
The tenant in situ scheme, right, has been in place for quite a long time. That is an established thing which exists. What is the point of announcing it as this is our new measure to help people when we lift the eviction ban
if it
already exists?
They're proposing to buy more properties than they previously were.
How effective has it been though, Gavin, as a way of keeping people in their properties?
The government, this is the tricky thing where I end up finding myself sort of repeating the government line, but
we're trying to tease out the issue.
The government line is that although the number of properties that have been bought thus far is quite small, so take for example Dublin City Council, again mindful that other local authorities are equally burdened. Dublin City Council has only managed to complete the purchase of 7 properties.
Well, complete the purchase is the key thing though, because the minister is saying the conveyancing
So this is the government's point, that although only 7 have been completed, that 400 in Dublin City Council alone are still somewhere in the process. And as long as they're somewhere in the process, then the tenant is safe, because they know for certain that the city council is going to be their landlord at the end of it, and the city council has no desire to remove them. So they would say, well, technically speaking, really, you've protected 400 tenancies by doing this, and that you just have to wait for the process to run its course.
The other one, which I'm still kind of flabbergasted that they keep on mentioning it, is the, if you are in a property and your landlord is selling it, you will have the first right of refusal to buy the property.
But that's if you have the money to buy it.
This is the point, Zara. Who's in this situation? I would love to see the numbers when this happens. And I hope to God people who are in this situation, who feel that they are about to be evicted by the landlord, are able to buy it out from under them.
Yeah.
I do not have much faith that this is going to be something which is going to resurrect people from...
Here's an example of somebody who might be in that situation. See here, we've got another lady saying, renting, got eviction notice, have to be out by November. 3 young kids, both of us are working parents and can't save. So that person doesn't have the deposit to buy the house they're living in.
What a chance.
I can't imagine too many people who have the means to buy a property still being in a rental property when rent is now so penal that if you had the money to buy, wouldn't you buy and deal with a far cheaper mortgage than dealing with the rent that's going out the door, which costs maybe about $1,000 a month more.
And here's another one, just more insecurity. My rent was raised by 20% in January. I'm afraid for what's to come. Is that legal? You can't.
There are still a few areas that are outside of rent pressure zones, so it's possible, but it doesn't sound like
not
it's
okay.
No.
20%?
20% is quite a bit.
20% is very cheap.
Before we get into the how this is all going to play out and what comes next thing, what's the vibe, to use the overused sort of phrase, of du jour at the moment in government around this? Because I asked Eamon Ryan yesterday in the post-cabinet thing, and I asked him how comfortable he would be with the fact that his legacy as the leader of the Green Party in government will be that he's lost perhaps a couple of TDs, but most importantly, is going to be responsible for a change in legislation that led potentially to hundreds, if not thousands of people being made homeless. And he said, we're going to sort it. and we're just going to do whatever we can to prevent people sleeping in Garda stations and in parks.
I think they know that they have lost in the public's eyes the argument, that they know that from a publicity perspective, this is irredeemable. That they're, that if they're, even if all of this comes good and even if they are vindicated in time, that what they are doing is the least worst option. It's going to take so long for the truth of that to come out that it's not going to help them this side of a general election, no matter when that comes anyway. So I think that they know that that's lost, which in truth is why there is a little bit more focus on, and you know, I'm guilty of focusing on this, but you're right to remind us of the human cost of all of this as well, about votes in the Dáil and what's going to happen. So the vote that's been happening this week, this non-binding vote on the Sinn Féin motion, is all window dressing to a point because it's symbolism, but it's only symbolism and nothing more. But there's another vote coming next week. Labour are tabling a motion of no confidence. And if that passes, the government is literally sacked. A motion of no confidence be passed in the Dáil triggers a general election. And suddenly this podcast looks very different because we're all doing it out on the roads following political parties around the place. So what's happening now in Leinster House is that you're seeing the government, even though it's only symbolism, trying to make policy concessions to independent TDs. Because basically, it's a way of almost doing a confidence and supply deal. It's like the last government where Fianna Fáil supported it from the outside. That's basically the point that we're getting to now. If the vote goes through but the Greens lose one or two members and the coalition is once again in a minority, doesn't mean that anyone is sacked immediately, but it means that they're dependent on outside and independence. So you start making policy deals now so that in a vote next week, those independents aren't going to collapse your government because they want to see those policies delivered.
So that's actually a point worth reflecting on in the overall how this is going to work and how the government is going to survive this, is that this can be quite a positive thing to probably look for a better word for a lot of independent TDs who can start to use this as a way of wielding influence then on government. They can be like, well, we'll back you in no confidence motion or in the counter motion regarding the eviction ban if you start doing X, Y, and Z, which I'd like you to do.
Yeah, and that you can argue that that's kind of part of the reason why people elect independent TDs, that maybe the circumstances come up where you're able to leverage stuff out of the government that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, it goes back to the conversation we've had here many times before, though, is that, like, people will eventually have no choice but to leave, and they will leave because how can you stay if you have nowhere to live?
Yeah.
And like, that's another thing that's coming up in the messages. I would have to leave Ireland. There are two houses to rent in my town of 25,000 people. So you are going to go back to that situation. And then you're going to have government ministers saying, but young people love to travel. They love to experience things. Yeah, they do love to travel and experience things.
They also
things,
love to live in the same places that all their friends are. And they love to live with where their families
are. And they like to
are.
Have a support network around them and have a family and, yeah, all of those things. Of course, it's going to be the bracket that will go because they like to travel. But that person is very clearly saying they would have no choice but to leave because of the circumstances. And I just find that, like, is that almost sort of like a cop-out then from the ministers who'll say, like, oh, but they love to travel. I mean, I just think if they don't have a choice. There's no choice being left here now.
And that's really what it comes down to, is the lack of choice. No doubt it is something that we're going to keep coming back to. Look, at this time next week, the government could have collapsed over the whole thing. I was going to say,
anecdotally, while we're just on this, right? When we were driving around LA last week, myself and Mark noticed that there's so many vacant properties in LA. Like, it's a totally different ballgame. Like, you drive down a couple of streets and they're like, you know, like apartments to let, places to let. Like, it's as if, I actually kind of, my perception of it was that LA seems quite empty and that a lot of people have actually left. It was such a stark contrast to what you see here. And like, LA is such a big city and such a booming and bustling place, you would think. And actually, it just, you know, there just seems to be way more like housing availability in one of the biggest, you know, places in the world, and yet Dublin is just absolutely wedged.
Food for thought. If you are listening or watching from other parts of the world and you want to let us know about how the housing situation is and whether there might actually be as many vacancies in wherever you are, do let us know. We're all available through all the usual social channels, and it is definitely something we're going to be coming back to. Welcome back to the group chat. We need to talk about China, or rather, well, are we talking about China or are we talking about TikTok? And Richard,
but
in talking,
you talk about one without the other.
Well, in talking about TikTok, are you talking about China? And they would like to.
Oh, are we? Yes, we are.
Are we? Oh, are we?
We are talking about China.
Are we?
Yes, we are. The two things are completely intertwined, and it has created a huge amount of fear and concern in governments across the world. And you've seen, people will have seen this, that you have places.
So, first principles, why are people concerned? What's going on?
People are concerned, and governments in particular are concerned, because they believe that TikTok and the access to data on your phone, which you approve as an unwitting user. And I actually went back as a result of all of this, having read a lot of the reports on TikTok and what it can do, or what it's purported it can do, had to go back and undo a lot of the data that it has access to, because the stuff that it does have access to is kind of worrying.
Oh,
so like it's like, able like to like, so the one of the big concerns, which will apply to people like us, is that TikTok employees have admitted this, right? So this isn't just a claim and pointed at it, that they spied on contacts of journalists, which they accessed through the TikTok app. So they're able, obviously, when you're using apps like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or TikTok,
and you
can do
find contacts from the phone numbers that are in your address book.
Access to all of your contacts. TikTok employees admitted that they went back to have a look at journalist contacts and who they were in contact with. So that's a big privacy concern. So
that's an immediate admission. Okay.
Yes.
But then where does the problem then stem? Like that sounds like it's an app developer or a company acting in surreptitious ways. Put a finer point in it. How does this involve China, the country?
TikTok, it's different from Twitter and all these other ones, right? In that it is Chinese. And some of the criticism which was going to be pointed at TikTok, some people will be very quick to sort of say this is a Red Scare sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And some of that you'd probably say maybe it is because people are making these claims without actually looking into them first. But if you actually look into it, so ByteDance is the parent company of TikTok. It is based in China. There was actually a really good Australian report into this in which they pointed to the links between ByteDance and the Chinese Communist Party, which is, of course, the ruling party in China, which is a human rights violating regime. Basically, the big concern is, and they have been pointing to this for a long time, is that the access of data can be sent back to China. And if you are a high profile government representative, if you are the president of the United States, if you are a TD or an MP,
if you're the minister for further and higher education,
absolutely, if you are any of these people, high profile TikTok users, or you could be journalists or whatever, that your data, whether that is your map, your movements, your contacts, your calendar, all of these things are accessed by TikTok. This data can be sent back. And under the Chinese legislation, the 2017 National Intelligence Law, all organizations and citizens shall support, assist, and cooperate with Chinese national intelligence efforts.
I mean, they're obligated to hand over that data if it's requested by the Chinese government.
TikTok has, of course, as they would, deny that they have ever done this.
Well, apart from, there's never been a request for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that they don't just do it anyway.
Well.
So you could have a situation where the Chinese government decides that it wants to know what the contacts of At News Chambers on TikTok are doing, and that effectively the Chinese government can just have all of that, and then they can have access to your calendar or my calendar or any other TikTok user's calendar and contacts book.
So have you gone back and unsynced your contacts?
I did, yeah. I went back and I undid a lot of that and what it's access to in terms of access to location and things like that. And I was just like, oof. Because, it was worrying. And, like, there is an element of... There's a separate element to this, which I'll touch on briefly, is that, like, separate to the privacy and all that sort of stuff, there is a fear in some circles that this is effectively going to be used as a propaganda tool by the Chinese government.
Well, this was the main concern in the United States, is that people will be pushed material and content that will be, you know, subliminal messaging.
Hot garbage as well.
So it's not so much then about them having access to other stuff on your phone, well, so much as they can control what you see.
Equal concerns. It's two separate concerns, I would say. You know, the idea, and it kind of goes back to... what was that Cambridge Analytica stuff, but at the time during the Facebook and the elections, everything. I think it's kind of a similar concern with TikTok now in terms of what are people consuming in terms of content and what are they being fed in terms of content. So it's two separate concerns, I would say. So there's two problems there. Mm. One is the individual data and what happens to you and your personal data. The other is how are you being influenced by the content that you're consuming on that platform.
And this obviously then has led to this whole spate of administrations and European bodies around the world that are deciding that TikTok should now not be installed on their official devices
for
fear of there being some kind of surveillance advice, which has not yet been replicated in Ireland, although the National Cybersecurity Centre says that it's looking at it.
And would that be, do you think Ireland is a little bit slower to cotton on to that because we basically appreciate all the jobs they've created here? Sorry, I'm just asking the question.
I can imagine government ministers tugging their collars like, oh.
I'm just asking the question. I'm just asking the question. I hate to think
that they're that transactional.
I know. I'm just saying, like, is that why we're a bit slower?
I suppose that there is a legitimate question as to why the Irish advice is materially different. Is there something different about the Irish TikTok user base? Or is it just that the Irish government doesn't foresee the surveillance threat that's there? I don't know whether you have an answer to that. But
are we not worth spying on, Gav?
We had this thing in Leinster House where they were talking about China potentially having some backdoor access to the CCTV cameras because they're produced by a Chinese company, and there's a perception again that the Chinese Communist Party could effectively access what they're seeing. And the answer at the time was, well, we're an influential EU country in which a lot of the privacy regulations are effectively set because the Data Protection Commissioner
is here
and when we have a lot of European headquarters. The one thing that I wanted to tease out, though, Richard, is all as you've said, being rational and well-grounded thus far, how is it different to American-headquartered social networks and everything that Edward Snowden taught us about the back doors that they have, and also the systems that they employ to try and manipulate what they see and the way that they populate their algorithms, which could potentially influence you one way or another as well?
A couple of points on that. First thing is that people probably should be more aware and more concerned about the access that apps of social networks and Google do have access to on your phone. People probably should do a little bit of a clean through and see what exactly, you know, your Google app, Twitter, has access
Can
to.
Can I just say, right, when you were saying that, I already know, because I myself am like borderline panicked about, like, what do we mean by that? Or people will listen to that and be like, oh, like, what am I supposed to do?
Here's the good advice for today. Here's the thing you can do, a little workshop after you listen to this.
Okay.
Go to settings on your phone, go to the privacy settings, and it'll go through and it'll have a list of all of your apps, right?
Yeah.
And it'll go through what each of the apps then has access to. So you can shut down access to your contacts list, your calendar, all that sort of stuff. Why do you need these things to have access to your calendar and stuff like that? Like, the big concern with TikTok is that, like, literally it can read the serial number on your SIM card and it'll have access to what your Wi-Fi networks are, which is not great stuff for it to have.
And then if you delete the app or you decide to leave it, do they retain that data or does it...
It's not entirely clear, is it really?
Yeah. I mean, if the other thing as well, I suppose, is, like, not to, like, lose sight of the point that TikTok is hugely popular and people absolutely love it. And it's been hugely influential in terms of it.
But
you love
it.
Like, out of the three of us, you're probably the most sort of, like, TikTok active. I'm not TikTok active at all, actually.
I would say now, you know, it has actually coloured my perception of the app and what is actually on it. Because one of the things which I think it was the Washington Post pointed to the other day was that one of the concerns that, you know, the West has about TikTok is that not just in terms of, you know, propaganda and not just in terms specifically of misinformation, but that if you wanted to and if TikTok, if its algorithm was so inclined, you can basically flood the entire algorithm, the For You page and all that sort of stuff, with such a mess of rubbish, internet garbage, that you create rows over absolutely everything. You can instigate culture wars, all this sort of stuff, which tears away at the fabric of a sort of a together society. Like, we've had so much talk about the culture wars in Ireland and Britain and the US and all that sort of stuff. If the algorithm is pushing all this stuff, we've also talked about Andrew Tate.
All of these things can be pushed and pushed
because the algorithm wants it to be pushed. If you can flood that, you can create a huge amount of uncertainty and social instability in countries. So
Which is then where we get to the point where the Biden administration is talking about forcing ByteDance to sell TikTok. That if they want to still be able to be accessed in America, that they can't be owned by a company with an alleged backdoor link to the Chinese government.
Yeah, but I wonder as well, when you go back to that, talking about users and how much they love it, how much will users stand for that as well? And will they feel almost like, I don't know, I wonder will there be some sort of kickback from users? What do you think?
Probably will be. I think actually it was interesting. Shou Chew, who is the CEO, he's a Singaporean guy. He's the CEO of TikTok. He's started posting up videos outside Congress basically saying, TikTok users, you tell the US government, you know, how much you love our app and what it's done for you and all that sort of stuff, which feels a bit weird. But he has had very little support in terms of actual congressional representatives. One Democrat has now come forward and is like, I love TikTok, let's all back TikTok.
So,
and has been met with a wall of, you're taking bribes from the communists. So, like,
but, like, even one guy out of 435, like, that's a pretty low success rate.
Not exactly a huge power base of people to play off. But it has been interesting. And some of the comments in response to Shou Chew's call to action have been fairly obviously botty sort of stuff, like, but it is the fastest growing social network by a huge distance. It is a very beloved app, but I think it does have a big problem, and this is only going to be a growing problem in how it deals with all this. I don't know whether the sale, if it does ever go ahead in terms of the US from ByteDance, will actually change things and make things better. But it does have an attitude problem towards these things, which I think is interesting as well. Like, I've spoken to a number of current and former TikTok employees here in Ireland who do not seem to be interested, I would say, in getting ahead of concerns people have, whether it be about security, surveillance and privacy, or in terms of abuse, misinformation, and, you know, children accessing adult content.
Is that because it's not a publicly traded company and it's privately owned, so that they don't feel that they've got that responsibility? Or is there something more
in the sort of Elon Musk sort of thing, and that Elon Musk doesn't really care?
So. If you now email the Twitter press office, you get an auto reply with the poo emoji.
Yeah.
Because it's a private company now, as far as he's concerned. So he's got no responsibility
to
anyone.
Which is a really responsible thing to people who are getting like rape threats and get onto Twitter to say, take that down, and they get a poo emoji back. Mm. That's a really responsible. I think social networks are vile institutions.
Every time
point.
I open Twitter now, it's asking me to remove that two-factor authentication.
The text one, yeah.
There are other ways to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Which are safer. But look, the problem is, I just feel that TikTok has a big problem in terms of messaging on this. They haven't shown any interest in getting ahead of this. Like, there's an element of them saying, like, I was chatting to one person in particular there who would have a decent enough standing within TikTok in Dublin, and there was just an attitude there. I was talking to them about, well, what are you going to do to try and, obviously the EU is going to clamp down on this, you have the governments in the UK and Canada and Belgium and Holland, all these places are saying time's up on this, we're removing it, and what are you going to do? But it's like, I don't really care. We're more interested in telling the good stories.
I wonder, does that confidence come from a place where people are love that app so much, they feel like they've got the people on their side? Like, do they almost feel like they have the numbers and the volume of support? Because that confidence has to come from somewhere. There almost has to be a certainty, you know, based on their own assessment, that people love this app so much and they're so confident in the usership that they have. Because, like, let's be honest, like you said yourself before, even the level of engagement you see versus Instagram is like a game changer. Like, it's totally different, you know. So I think there's an element of confidence there that comes from the idea that perhaps users won't be told what to do by their governments, that they'll, you know, that they'll stay loyal to the brand and stay loyal to the app.
It's going to be very interesting to see how it does play out. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that they've launched a couple of initiatives now in terms of, like, you know, child protection, child safety on it, because I do think of all of the apps that I use regularly, it does potentially, I would say, and this is a big, tall statement considering Twitter exists, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of overall misinformation and the amount of absolute effluent that can be just spread so quickly in comment sections on videos I put up about, you know, housing or, you know, refugee situation, TikTok has a massive problem, and it does seem to reward bad faith actors and people who will literally fling the most crap at a wall. It does seem to reward those people the most.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
We're going to talk about the IPCC climate report, and when we were talking about how we were going to tackle this, because this could get very doom and gloom very quickly, we set out by saying that actually the report, although the consequences of not acting are quite stark, that, and people will be almost a little bit blasé about doom and gloom climate reports, the one that was published this week doesn't have to be seen as bad news. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're saying that the world has a small number of years to act in ways that don't cause irreparable and irreversible cataclysmic disaster. For thousands of years. It can be hard to imagine what's the positive in that.
Okay, well, let me start with the good news.
Yeah, so what's the good news?
The good news is that this is, I think this should be viewed as a positive document, despite the fact that it says that we could doom ourselves
like
for thousands of years.
Like a clear roadmap almost.
Clear roadmap.
Okay.
It says that everything we need to fix this problem is currently terrible? Exists. And it is currently owned by the richest governments in the world, and they have absolutely all the tools, all the know-how to fix this within this decade.
So we have the know-how and the means to make this all happen.
And some of the groundwork has been done. Some of the most important groundwork has been done.
Lovely.
Just about whether or not we follow through with it, and whether or not our governments care enough about, you know, the survival of the actual planet to actually put these things into motion.
It's terrible that you get into nervous laughter when you're talking about, like, the survival of the planet, because those are the stakes.
It just feels like this is fine. Dog in a burning room meme, really, yeah. Like, you know.
It's a bit close to the bone, actually, though, really.
And what's the
room.
Bad news then that it's the we're
well,
not
the bad news
it?
Is the extinction. Well, not extinction. It is the you know, cataclysmic weather events are just going to become more and more like the threshold. Really, the whole point of all these things is to keep overall average temperature rise below the 1.5 mark. Mm. As it stands, if we keep going where we're going to 3 degrees as opposed to 1.5. Okay. But if we keep it under 1.5 or thereabouts, achievable goal.
The point being that if you raise temperatures at a global average higher than that, that you kick off a series of extreme weather events which effectively make large parts of the world not just inhospitable, but actually uninhabitable.
Yeah.
That you either have like low-lying areas drowning or areas that are in the path of such violent storms that no one could tenably live there ever. Which, you know, when you think about it in those stark terms, like it sometimes it makes the climate skepticism like just baffling me because like those are the terms. Like that's what we're talking about here.
I know it's kind of, but I feel like every time we talk about it, it's kind of what you started out with. Like it really is quite like shocking to the point of like almost feeling overwhelming for people on a human level. Like I think sometimes like on an individual basis, you sort of find yourself gasping for like, what can I do? What can I do? But the truth is, as you said, Richard, like we're relying on the world's richest governments to really kind of step up and take that role.
Of which we're one.
We are.
Well, you know. I know.
And we're laggards as well. We're not great. We'll touch, but like that's something, actually, I'm reading a really good book at the moment. It's called Burnham Wood. It's by a New Zealand author called Eleanor Chatton, I think it is. Basically, it's about, you know, the way that all these billionaires are trying to build like escapes from climate change in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. They're buying like these super bunkers and all that sort of stuff. It's based around that and these ecological pirates who go around planting trees and all that sort of stuff. So there's a conflict between this like sort of an Elon Musk-y sort of billionaire and these New Zealand basically pirates who are planting trees and stuff. It's an unbelievable book. It's probably going to win a Booker Prizes here, but it's really good. But it just brings it home again to the fact that the people who cause the most damage are the richest people in the world, and the people who suffer the most damage are, you know, some of the poorest in the world.
Do you know what I do think is kind of good, though? It's like the culture shift that we see in certain things on small levels. Like, so, for example, when we talk about, say, fast fashion, right? We talk about, there was a time where, like, if you wore something twice, you were almost kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe you wore that twice or whatever. Whereas now it's like
Facebook
really
ruined that. You can wear the same thing.
Oh, because your picture be on Bebo and you wore that. Yeah. But I think it's great now that we do have this culture now where everything's changing and people are rewearing and upcycling and sharing clothes and all that kind of stuff. But likewise with the private jet culture now, like, it's kind of like gone from being a real swag thing to be flying private with these big celebrities. And it's now more of a like kind of embarrassing that you've done that. But that shifted really probably in the last kind of 2 to 3 years, which I actually think like those cultural changes and how we view things will probably have a bit of an impact. But I just thought that was interesting that now if you see someone flying private, instead of being sort of like, that's aspirational, you're sort of like, what are you doing?
Even Taylor Swift nearly got cancelled for taking a few too many short hop private jet flights. Mm. And like, if Taylor Swift can get cancelled, like something has materially changed.
Yeah.
The stakes of this report, so effectively what it's now calling for is for the world's most advanced governments to try and reach net zero, where the amount of carbon emissions that you produce are offset by other ecological initiatives by the year 2040. And that's a big change because previously they were saying 2050, that if you got halfway there by 2030 and you got rid of them altogether by 2050, then the world could be kept within the acceptable bounds of temperatures rising. And now they're saying 2040, which requires everyone to be way more ambitious. Mm. And ironically, it's coming at a time when Ireland is kind of becoming less ambitious. So there's some of our own, you know, climate targets that are still undefined. I was speaking to someone in the government who'd know in the last couple of weeks, who reckons that eventually the government will collapse, not on housing, but will collapse over emissions. Mm. Because when it comes to figuring out how agriculture and land use, what you have to do to make stuff work, that there isn't enough ambiguity left that you're going to have to pull the plug eventually. But so, for example, Ireland was going to originally ban the sale of petrol and diesel cars by the year 2030. Mm. And that's been the policy for like 6 or 7 years. And then the EU recently adopted a new policy EU-wide where they said they were going to phase it out by the year 2035. Now, we're not allowed to depart from an EU policy that they take on in an area like this. So our plans to phase them out by 2030 are now getting delayed by 5 years. But they're now being delayed at a time when actually the entire world has been told to pull your socks up because we need to get all this done quicker than was otherwise planned. So it's hard to imagine when the world is kind of looking for get-out clauses and slowing down, and the world has all the means, like you said, Richard, and has all the resources and all the know-how to be able to achieve all these things and hasn't been doing them up till now. You've now been told that you have to get them done quicker and that the job in front of you is harder when the slightly easier job wasn't being done. That's where the bad news comes in.
The last email I read into my inbox before we started this was the confirmation from the government that the grant for new electric vehicles was being reduced.
What?
So
why are they doing that?
Is that because more people want them? Actually, do you know what, the last couple of taxis I've gotten into have all been electric vehicles.
Yeah, a lot of taxi drivers are moving
electric. A lot of
but in Dublin, like, a lot of taxi drivers are moving to electric.
There's plenty of charge points.
Yeah, really, like, you know, seems a great impetus there amongst certainly taxi drivers I've seen that are moving to electric.
So on the upside, then, there is something of a roadmap, and the UN has presented it as a roadmap for humanity, as long as it's followed. It's whether it's followed is the thing. Is that where we are?
Yep.
I think so.
Right, okay. Follow the roadmap, everyone. Cheers. Thanks, everyone.
Gav, I was absolutely deceased when I saw who you had met the other night. Like, so it was Paddy's Day.
Yeah, you gotta spit it out.
Oh, I've met some people. Toby Ziegler from The West Wing.
Yeah, the actor Richard Schiff.
Gav, like, I'm not normally, like, super starstruck, but I was... Like, you saw them. I sent you a video and everything. I was losing my mind. It was so cool.
That was a living your best life kind of moment.
Oh,
so
wow.
Richard Schiff was at a cultural event thing that was on St. Patrick's Night in Washington. So there was this cultural showcase thing being put on and the Taoiseach was there. And it was the very last event of the whole thing. And suddenly we're like, hey, Richard Schiff, who played Toby Ziegler, is there on the other side of the room.
First, just a quick pause for the younger people. The West Wing is a program in the 1990s set around the American presidential organization.
Between the West Wing.
No, it's not mansplaining. It's actually explaining to our listeners are way too young for it.
It's youth-splaining. So between 1990
and also, it's also something, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut it in early. It's also just the preserve of people who work in politics as well. Like, they love
it. That's not.
Oh, yeah. Completely. It's like,
no,
completely.
It's not. I know loads of non-political completely. People who love
it. It is revered by people who think, who have a certain level of naivety that you can just go into politics and be a nice person and make a difference when there's actually a lot more.
And then they go in and they do the opposite.
But Richard Schiff played Toby Ziegler, who was the communications director and all of that.
Great character.
For between 98 and 2006.
Great character.
Years.
He was a great character.
Also
a very nice man by all accounts, Gav.
Yeah.
A hugely nice man. So he was at this event because I think his wife's name is Sheila Kelly, so fair idea that she might have some Irish links. So he was at the event, and myself and another correspondent who can name themselves if they want to, I won't name them, Paul Hosford, went up and asked, could we have a photograph? And he was just very, very lovely and posed for a couple of pictures. And then I was like, wait a minute.
Did you do the video for Kira?
So it was a few minutes past 8 o'clock in Washington, which meant it was a few minutes past midnight, which meant that it was now my wife's birthday. And having walked away from him, I then went back up and said, sorry, me again, me hassling you again, very sorry. It was my wife's birthday 19 minutes ago. So would you mind awfully sending her a birthday message.
Great show.
I love
and
this.
He a great show.
Immediately launched into singing happy birthday to her.
Aww.
And then having concluded that, then asked how you sing it in Irish.
Ooh.
And sang it in Irish to her.
Gav.
What a touch. What a touch of clash in this man.
What a touch.
Oh my God.
As cynical as I am about the West Wing, I've actually talked about this podcast.
So you pair back your cynicism about the West Wing.
No, because I actually, of the characters in the West Wing, Toby Ziegler, top class character, Richard Schiff, good follow on Twitter as well, actually, by the way.
Oh, is he? I don't follow him.
Good follow on the socials. What a nice man. What a nice thing.
So are you up for husband of the year now at this point?
I did miss her birthday by being in America.
Do you think the video or the big bag of stuff from Bath and Body Works was the winner in the end?
Well, the bag of stuff from Bath and Body Works is a more annual fixture, so I don't know if that makes me any better or lesser. But the one thing which was just really, really surreal about the whole Richard Schiff thing was that we only then realised, as we were sort of partying and being like, sorry, we'll let you back to your evening now, thanks for indulging us twice, is that he was there with another actress called Melissa Fitzgerald, who plays Carol in The West Wing.
There you go.
Oh,
who's another one of the cast members that they just go places together.
So crucially, right, and this is the icing on the cake, Richard, he's agreed to do the podcast if he ever comes to Ireland.
Has he?
Did you not say that? No.
No.
Did you not say he
said? You just dreamed this into existence.
No.
It's incredible that.
I think you've had a fever dream there.
Did you say that if he comes here, you might come hang out with us? Or did I ask you to ask him that? Maybe?
Yeah, so you might come hang out with.
Ah, boo.
Minutely embarrassing
that's
that is.
Terrible.
In a non-holistic sense.
Come here.
But he did say that he would come and chase us up next time he is in Dublin.
That's nice.
I'm translating that into the podcast.
Let's use that as a lever then to see if he'll come on. And you can badmouth the West Wing to his face then.
I have no intention. I don't want to spoil a nice man's evening is what I'm going to do. Come here, just generally on the Washington trip, is there anything else, man, that sort of happened or anything good that can peel back the curtain? Because it can be the stuff that happens on camera, apart from the odd obvious gaffe that we talked about last week.
And we only spoke
there was a gaffe literally that happened.
A matter of hours after we recorded it.
Possibly it was even minutes after. Maybe it was a couple of hours.
It was literally within 3 or 4 hours after we recorded that he had his interns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And that he did his internship in DC at a time when parents were worried about the welfare of interns in Washington.
Which is a terrible, terrible gag, I must say.
Whether it was
for Jay Leno 1990s gag.
Gag or not, I'm not sure. But just what was particularly inopportune was that he'd been sitting down with Hillary Clinton a matter of hours earlier. So to pass a gag about her husband being a sexual predator was, you know, maybe a little tone deaf, particularly when the Clintons are both coming to Ireland in the space of a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The one thing which I thought was interesting was there was a big perception at home based on one newspaper piece that Leo Varadkar had snubbed some investors by not going to lunch with them. And that really puzzled people around Leo Varadkar, because Leo Varadkar had in fact met the very investors concerned. He had fulfilled exactly what the scheduled meeting was. And there was a suggestion then that when they invite him to hang back, or that they expected him to hobnob over lunch, that he made it clear that his schedule was micromanaged and that he had other things to do, like being briefed on what was going on at home. So they found it a bit peculiar that he was being accused of snubbing people by fulfilling the scheduled meeting. Which is maybe just interesting to put on the record. Now, granted, there's always two sides to every story, and you can definitely say that one reason why the Taoiseach should go to these events is because there might be a networking opportunity beyond what is strictly allowed for in the diary, but just one little instance of how not everything was as perceived.
It's more looking for the crack, Gavin.
I was just going to say, did you get to chat to Niall Horan at all, or what was the crack?
No, in fact, no, I boycotted that because I went to the other school in Mullingar than him. There were two graduates of the music school of St. Finian's College in Mullingar in the room, made listen to a CBS fella. But to be fair, he was actually very good. I'd never heard him live before. And when you hear him like live in, like, I know it's a function room in the White House, but it is a relatively intimate setting. There was no fallback. There was no pre-production. It was all just live stuff. And that guy can hold a tune.
Yeah, he's going to be a judge on The Voice in the States, actually. I saw a billboard when we were in LA.
So the usual suspects were there as well. Joe Brawley, Rob Kearney, Loretta Blewett, all those. Rob Kearney flew straight back out.
And was on Virgin Media Sport the next day.
Yeah, I was astonished to see that.
He was my amazing transatlantic travel inspo, that if he can go back and he can go telly the following day, that I could definitely roll in for radio.
Ounce of jet lag in that man's face.
Yeah. He did tell me that he had gotten Joe's people to do his makeup before the plane to try and make sure that he looked well for everyone on Grand Slam Saturday.
Grand Slam.
We did.
We fair play, Ireland. You mentioned that was class.
So well done, Ireland. We're completely out of time. It's been great to be back again in the room. I hope we get to do it much more.
Yeah, this has been nice, actually.
Yeah, it has been nice.
Yeah, it's been lovely.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zara.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone in the gallery, Dan, Maxine, Gareth, Ross, Rory, all the team. And we will catch you again next time.